Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. F*** you, all you unofficial podcasts. What are you even doing out there? I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and I have no idea why I'm so competitive today. With me, as always, there's Amanda Waltz.
Hello.
And joining us special today, because Danny and Nick both could not be here, we have... Bill Graham. I was going to say Will Graham because I've been watching Hannibal.
Oh, yes.
I do love me some Hannibal, but you are not Will Graham.
I'm not.
You could not close. It's funny, though, because your Skype is William Graham.
That is my actual name.
Right, but you don't go by that.
No.
Right. But I'm just like now picturing you closing your eyes and empathizing with the Indominus Rex to see why it's killing so much.
I do have a little pop bobblehead of the Will Graham in the straitjacket. So.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. You watch it too, Hannibal?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so we're scrapping the Jurassic World podcast. We're just going to be talking about the first two episodes of the new season of Hannibal.
Oh my god.
Wait, don't spoil. So I haven't seen the second one yet.
Oh, what? You haven't seen the second one?
I haven't seen the second episode yet.
Oh, fuck you, Amanda.
Sorry.
You and your bridal shower shit.
Were you really going to scrap it?
No, but it would have been cool to be able to talk about this one thing from that episode that was just the craziest thing that show has ever done.
Don't. I will find you and I will kill you if you spoil it for me.
She will eat you.
Okay, anyway, so today we will be talking about Jurassic World, newest film by director Colin Trevorrow, who did Safety Not Guaranteed a couple years ago. This is the fourth film in the Jurassic Park franchise, and it stars Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt. Before we get into that, we want to have a brief discussion about the previous films in the franchise, see what we remember of them, apparently, and what we thought of them. Let me remind everyone at home, you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com with any thoughts you may have, and you can reach us on thefilmstage.com and comment on the pages that these are posted on. And you can reach us on Twitter, both at our personal handles and at our show handle, which is @filmstageshow, just like Sumner Forbes did. Sumner Forbes said that every episode should start with Brian Rowan and Amanda making the third party feel as awkward as possible.
So oh, Danny.
Get
poor
ready,
Danny.
Bill. It's about to get weird up in here.
Which, Sumner Forbes, thank you for following me on Letterboxd as well.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I wonder if he follows me on Letterboxd. I could look it up, but I won't.
Why would he follow you, Brian?
Because I just gave Monkey Bone 3.5 stars.
I haven't used Letterboxd in like 7 months.
I have been making a concerted effort to use it this year to help me with my top 10 list at the end of the year.
Actually, that's a good way to go about it.
Yeah.
Well, so, if you gave Monkey Bone 3.5 stars, I gave I Know Who Killed Me 3 stars.
Oh,
so.
Boy. Okay.
Yeah. So I shouldn't judge.
Yeah, you definitely shouldn't.
Have you seen that movie?
No, but I've heard things.
It's like avant-garde. it's so weird.
Is it like accidentally avant-garde?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It is. But at one point, she has this like mechanical hand that basically looks like Mickey Mouse's hand.
What the
fuck? What the fuck is this?
I Know Who Killed Me, the Lindsay Lohan movie from like 2000.
Oh, wow. Okay,
like when she started her downslide.
Damn.
That was like months into her downslide.
Well, I think that was the cinematic proof.
Okay.
Because she still had like a couple good titles to her name, and then she did that, and it was like, okay. But
right.
It is. I think I said in my review that it's going to screen at the MoMA in 20 years.
Nice.
And some weird retrospective because it's so weird. But yeah, anyway, enough about I Know Who Killed Me.
So let's talk. Let's talk about the Jurassic Park films.
Great segue.
I will say a confusingly titled franchise, much like Fast and Furious or The Fast and the Furious. We have Jurassic Park, obviously, Steven Spielberg's 1993 original. Then, 4 years later, we have The Lost World, Jurassic Park, the sequel, also directed by Steven Spielberg.
That's been done, like, the Jurassic Park tag at the end of that film was done recently, wasn't that?
No, I remember that from when it first came out.
Really? Yeah. Okay. So they did the whole, like, Twilight and Hunger Games thing before they started doing that. Okay.
They're like, the Jurassic Park saga. And then we had Jurassic Park 3.
Was it just called Jurassic Park 3?
It was just Jurassic Park 3, which is a
subtitle.
Because there was no Jurassic Park 2. It wasn't even like The Lost World Jurassic Park 2 or Jurassic Park 2 The Lost World. It was just The Lost World Jurassic Park. So then we have Jurassic Park 3, and now this weekend we get Jurassic World.
Okay.
Yes. So, guys, questions abound. What is... Like, I even have to ask this question out loud. What is your favorite Jurassic Park movie?
Oh, well, Brian. I actually have a weird affinity for the third one.
But you still like Jurassic Park more.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Jurassic Park is a perfect movie.
Right.
Jurassic Park 3, though, is just so... There is a moment in the film where Alan Grant suggests that if the... I think he actually brings up the Big Bang and says that if the Big Bang hadn't happened, that Velociraptors would have been the dominant species, not humans.
which he means the extinction event, like the K2 or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Not the Big Bang. Did I say Big Bang?
Yeah, you did.
Oh shoot, sorry.
I was like, wait a second.
Like,
so
I haven't seen that movie in a bit.
Existence but... didn't happen.
No, I. Yeah, wait, what do they call when the meteorite hit?
It's the
extinction event. We'll call it that.
Giant explosion thing.
I don't know why I just called it the Big Bang. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
So you were trying to tell us that Grant was an idiot when really you're the idiot.
I'm a pretty big idiot, Brian. Okay, I think we all know this.
But it also sounded like you were explaining his man crush on Velociraptors.
Oh, in that movie, like, he has a huge man crush on Velociraptors. Like, they do a 3D printing of, like, an echo chamber from the Velociraptors. He's like, they could speak, like, more intelligently than we ever thought possible, as evidenced in the third film, by using that hollow thing to actually speak to them.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Right, because there's a...
Yeah, he's blowing through it, right?
Yeah, he blows through it when he's giving their eggs back, because they've been following them because this asshole stole their eggs. That's not even bringing up the Spinosaur that's following them with a Nokia cell phone.
Oh, that is so fantastic.
It keeps going off.
When they turn around and that thing is standing behind them.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was amazing.
But it is like, so have you guys ever seen Jaws 3? It's also known as Jaws 3D.
Yes, I have.
Yes, I've seen that recently.
I think there are some parallels between Jaws... Oh, actually, I think there are more parallels between Jurassic World and Jaws 3, but I'll explain that later. But it is like
a theme park.
Yeah. Well, there's others, but okay. I'll go into that anyway. Cool. But there's like, but I think it's just there's something about the second sequel to a successful film where it's the second film. It's like, oh, we're gonna try to recreate the magic of the first film, and of course, usually never happens. But the third film is basically like, we don't care. We're just gonna do whatever. And I don't know, I find that sort of like, I don't know, I just find it kind of appealing. I don't know. Like, there's just something about this totally like dismissive, like, whatever, we're going to make this movie. It's a total cash grab. We don't care. And it's always like the goofiest, dumbest movie. But
yeah,
I kind of like it.
Okay,
it's got a sense of reckless charm to it.
Yeah, reckless charm. That's a very good way to put it. Yes,
because the first film is like you said, it's a perfect movie.
Yeah, it is.
Like, you show up, everything seems fine, things go to hell, people escape. It's like a classic monster chase movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now the second one,
very mixed,
very weird.
They try to make way too much stuff happened in that movie.
I still have a very vivid memory of sitting in that movie theater as the helicopters come to rescue everyone from the island. And as they're getting in the helicopters and flying away, people around me start standing up. And it was my birthday. And because everyone's like, okay, the movie's over. Let's go home and eat cake. So everyone starts standing up. And I said out loud in the theater, what about the T-Rex they shot? And there was a pause. And then the scene switches. And it is indeed the T-Rex that was shot with the tranquilizer dart getting like loaded onto a boat or something. And everyone was like, oh, this is still happening. And then everyone like really embarrassedly sat down.
Wow.
And then there was like bad. 20 more minutes where the dinosaurs running around San Diego for no reason.
It's pretty bad. And also having Jeff Goldblum be a side character in the first movie was great. Just fantastic. Having him be the main character, not so much.
And he seems like a completely different character.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's not our same crazy-ass guy. In one of the previous episodes when we were talking about Jeff Goldblum, I actually inserted his laughter. And
I remember this.
It was incredible, in all honesty, to go back and listen to it. And yeah, in that movie, in The Lost World, he becomes just like competent action hero kind of guy.
That's a hard sell for Jeff Goldblum,
right? Especially because he was such a nut in the first film. The third film also has a dream sequence where a raptor speaks to Alan Grant in English.
It's so great.
Which is fantastic. It also kills off one of the T-Rexes in order to show how the Spinosaur is a much more powerful creature.
Well, and that was the big draw for that movie was, oh, you're going to see this amazing dinosaur fight between the Spinosaur and the T-Rex. And it lasts all of, 10 seconds?
Right. And yeah, the Spinosaur just like, it fucking wins.
Oh, of course.
And no one is happy about that because we had an affection for the T-Rex.
Oh my God, of course.
This is like if, let me put it this way. In The Lost World, the T-Rex is basically Ripley from Aliens, because the reason it's running around San Diego is because it wants to find its child that these industrialists have absconded with.
Mm.
And then you go to Jurassic Park 3 and you kill the T-Rex? Like, that's like if Alien 3 opened with someone just straight up shanking Ripley. Instead of everyone dying.
Instead of everyone else dying.
Yeah.
Spoiler. That's not really a spoiler.
Spoiler for Alien 3. Sorry.
I guess that happens in the first 5 minutes of that film. So.
And so, yeah, it literally happens during the title sequence. But yeah, so Jurassic Park 3, it had this like, you know, mean-spirited, we've killed off the T-Rex, this thing is so much more like big and threatening, but no one really cared. Like,
well, yeah. It was also a lame looking dinosaur. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, let's be honest. Like the Spinosaurus, like, meh.
It's like a crocodile with a fin on the back of it. And like,
you know what
obviously.
Reminded me of was when they did the remake, the 90s remake of Godzilla.
Oh yeah.
It reminded me of that.
That's a good point.
Where everyone was like, we're just gonna make it look like a effed up lizard. Cool, right?
I think fuck was literally the fifth word that I said when I started this, so you don't have to F yourself.
There are children listening to this podcast, Brian.
That's true. That is true.
Because this is the Jurassic World podcast.
What if I just bleep every time I say fuck during this podcast? I think I'm going to do that now, actually.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so crazy. And the only thing that kind of makes Jurassic Park 3 worthwhile is the fact that it goes so bananas. Like, it is a straight-up comedy for a little while.
And there is... It's William H. Macy.
Yeah. And Tia Leone.
Which is so...
As, like,
just odd.
Incredibly neurotic parents who are trying to find their child.
Let's give a shout-out to the casting directors of this entire series. They have just, like, gotten so many big names... Either at their peak, near their peak, or post-peak even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just like you look at all the different actors that have been involved with this series, and it's pretty incredible.
Laura Dern, Richard Attenborough, Sam Neill, Jeff Goldblum. You got your Vince Vaughns. You got your Tobys from The West Wing. Julianne Moore, Pete Postlethwaite, Peter Stormare. Then you've got
Peter Stormare was in one of them.
He was in the Lost World. He was the asshole who got killed by the Compsognathus.
Oh wow, I do not remember that at all. I remember Vince Vaughn doing nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. And then you've got in the third one, you got Sam Neill again, Laura Dern again. What a waste that was. William H. Macy, Tia Leone, and then you've got the guy who had Mr. Jingles in The Green Mile.
Oh.
Are you talking about the giant black man?
No, the kind of simple white dude with the mustache.
Oh my god, I do not remember that at all. I remember the guy who ended up marrying that 16-year-old girl in real life. I think he was in that movie.
He was in The Green Mile, yes.
Yeah, he was in The Green Mile.
He was also Morgan Freeman. Stepped on the mount. No, what? Morgan Freeman.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who remembers that.
No,
Morgan Freeman married like his like 20-year-old great granddaughter or something like that.
His step granddaughter or some. It was still creepy. It's creepy. Regardless,
I've never heard that. And yet no one will shut up about Woody Allen marrying his adopted daughter. So let's stop
Let's veer away right now.
I'm just wondering why I never heard this Morgan Freeman thing before. What I was saying is, now that we've gone through the entire cast of The Green Mile, I still think that The Lost World is better than Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
So, like, Wait, you just said you like Jurassic Park 3 more.
No,
I said I have an affinity for it, but I don't. I thought you meant out of all three of the Jurassic Park films. I mean,
Jurassic Park
three.
Is going to win, obviously.
Yes. Yeah.
So it comes down to Lost World, which
Lost
was...
Lost World is dead last for me.
What?
Lost World is dead last. It's terrible. So it's so boring.
You have contradicted yourself at least five times.
No. Okay.
In the last
two minutes. Do I have to make a ranking for you to understand?
Yes. This
do.
Is the point of asking what is your favorite after Jurassic Park.
So it would go Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, Jurassic Park 3, Lost World.
Well, wait a second for the actual review.
I didn't say that Jurassic Park 3 was my favorite. I said I have a certain affection for it. Because it's so bananas.
If I were to ask you, do you prefer tuna or lobster, and then you told me hamburger, you still hadn't answered my question.
Wait, out of all of the Jurassic Park? Wait, what are we talking about?
All I wanted to know, Amanda.
Brian, the answer to your question is Jaws 3 is my favorite movie.
Okay, great. So, Bill, you're with me. You're going like straight descent, Jurassic Park, Lost World, Jurassic Park 3, right?
I don't even consider the other two films, to be honest with you.
You just like try to forget about them?
Yeah. Before we started podcasting, you know, very obviously I was confused, continue to be confused about which film is which, because a lot of the elements end up kind of running into each other as far as my memory is concerned, because I've just kind of tried to block it out. I avoid those other movies as much as possible.
They are
like the prequel trilogy for me. So,
Well, that works in your favor, because let's be honest, Jurassic World treats it as though those two movies didn't happen either.
And you know, I read an interview with Trevorrow just recently, and he was saying that there's actually some nuggets in there that mention the other two films. And I went into this film yesterday night looking for it. And I didn't find anything.
I saw maybe one like callback to Jurassic Park 3. I didn't see anything else. I know that they did a kind of like other reality thing where like you could see video clips online, like that are little character trailers almost that
talk
about the other films in a way.
Mm.
But I didn't see it anywhere else.
I and like I said, I was looking for that And the entire time I was watching the film, I was just like, I see so many callbacks to Jurassic Park, but not Lost World and not JP3.
To JP3. To be fair, though, you could not tell the difference between them if they were in the lineup.
Oh, this is very true.
Everyone seems to think that Vince Vaughn has been in every one of these movies.
Wait, Vince Vaughn wasn't in Jurassic World? He wasn't?
Anyway.
Wait.
Let's move on. Let's get to our feature review, which is, again, of Jurassic World, the newest film in the Jurassic Park franchise. In this film, the park is open.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to boost ticket sales, they have decided to create a hybrid dinosaur. Whether or not that turns out to be a wise decision, we will soon talk about. Here's the trailer.
We have learned more in the past decade from genetics than a century of digging up bones. A whole new frontier has opened up. We have our first genetically modified hybrid.
We just went and made a new dinosaur?
Probably not a good idea.
Almost 40 feet high. Really think she climbed out?
Depends.
On what?
What kind of dinosaur they cooked up in that lab? Evacuate the island.
So, Jurassic World. It was the movie that no one was asking for, and no one knew what to think about when they heard about it. Let's see what we thought. Bill, you are technically our guest, so why don't you start us off? What did you think of Jurassic World?
Sure. You know, coming into this series has a very key issue, and the first film obviously lays it out and succeeds in basically setting up the dynamics of, okay, we are bringing dinosaurs back. This is a terrible idea. We're trying to make this work. Oh no, it goes to hell. That ends up being the entire crux of this series. So it's hard to jump into a movie like this and kind of give it that leeway and be like, okay, I'm fine with doing this again. But, you know, nobody else really does dinosaurs on the screen except this movie series. So I'm okay with it. Like, I'll go ahead and accept that.
Right. You'll take the logic leap as long as there's a raptor leaping as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as long as you give me my raptors, I'm good. The funny thing about coming into this movie is the idea is, oh no, we're not just satisfied with having a functioning, like, you know, amusement park island. No, we're gonna make like a giant Tyrannosaurus hybrid, you know, creature. And right. That just seems like a very, very, very bad idea. And the way they justify it in the film is actually interesting, the way that it kind of parallels the fact that this movie even exists to begin with.
Absolutely.
They basically say it's a money grab. We have to continue to seek profits. We have to basically give our shareholders a reason to continue backing us. And, you know, in a way, it makes so much sense that it's maddening that it makes any sense at all. You're just like, no, I want to reject this whole hat. And it's hard to just simply by the fact that this film even exists, you know?
Right.
So the action set pieces, I found some of them quite creative and fun. Chris Pratt has a lot to do in this film. He's a cocky motherfucker, and I love it. He kind of takes on the Muldoon role of the first film, right, with a lot more screen time and a lot more fun. Muldoon, you know, rest in peace, man. But he was definitely like one of the best parts of the original film. But he took his role a little bit too seriously. And this time around, you know, we get a guy that's kind of in the lead and he has a little bit more fun with it.
Yeah.
He's definitely the lighthearted nature throughout this entire film, which it very much needs. And I think as a whole, the film succeeds as just like a straight entertainment thrill ride. It has a lot of storylines that it's trying to pull together at once, which kind of sometimes becomes confusing and sometimes becomes a little overburdensome to the film itself. I think it runs just a little over 2 hours.
Yeah, it's like 2 hours and 3 minutes.
So considering that, they fit a lot of narrative into this film and still give you pretty much everything that you kind of want. The characters themselves are pretty flat, especially the two nephews are pretty dull, I'd say, except for the youngest one. The youngest one has a little interesting quirks here and there, but the older one is just in this weird kind of mental state of just wanting to hit on every single woman that he finds.
I mean, aren't we all?
there were some fly honeys at the Gyrosphere.
Oh man,
you know what's funny though? I know other people have brought up like the actions of that older nephew kid, and I recall a trip that I took once to Disney World with my parents when I guess I was probably around that same age, maybe a little younger, and I legit had like that type of thing where I like wasn't paying attention to anything else. I was just scoping out the chicks. I was flirting with girls in line, and I remember being 100% pissed off when I was just about to sit in like a roller coaster next to an incredibly cute girl who I'd been like eye flirting with like you do, and then I was put into a different car and had to sit next to my brother. You know what? She had those
recalling
little like
memories.
She had those little like sparkly Mickey Mouse silhouette heads on like springs on her head. So cute.
Wow, Brian.
Anyway, so
I'm not suggesting that his character is anything out of the ordinary or anything like oh, this character is such a you know, hyper real, you know, man slut, but no, like it's fine that's happening. I just don't want it in my Jurassic Park film.
Okay, I guess I can get behind that.
Well, and that's actually a good point that you bring up, Bill, because I remember watching a really old episode of At the Movies with Siskel and Ebert, and I think they were reviewing E.T. And one of the things they brought up was that Steven Spielberg really made it a point to not inject any sex into his films, which he wanted them to be for the whole family. And so he was like, I don't want to have any kind of suggestion of like, I mean, obviously, you know, later on he made like Schindler's List and there was sex in that. But like his early films are very like there's no sex. There's no like love, like not even really love stories. I mean, there is in like maybe like Raiders, but that's that's not really like I don't know. Wait,
have you like rewatched Raiders recently? Because it makes it pretty clear that like Indiana Jones had sex with Marion Ravenwood when she was like way young.
But it's not like I don't know. It's not so. It's pretty chaste at the same time.
I was a child. Anyway,
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah.
Well, I understand what you're saying because I definitely remember.
There's tons of innuendos. There's so many.
There
innuendos.
Is. There is.
Really just blatantly like cheesy innuendos.
That's one of the things that I liked about this movie. I guess I can just
like
say it
too.
Now. I like this movie quite a bit more than everyone else seems to. And one of the things I liked about it was that it was more like it had more naturalism. That's not right. What am I trying to say? There's a lot more biology in it. Like this is the first,
what, the cuttlefish stuff?
This is no, I'm saying
that,
like,
is that what you're into?
Yeah, oh god. Anytime you bring up a cuttlefish. I know all about cuttlefish and their chromatophores. I actually watched a documentary on it once. It was weird.
You and this little kid in the film would get along really well.
We would. With his
1992 beige Sahara Jeep.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? That kid would probably be my kid. Like, if I had a child, it would be that kid. And I would take him to Jurassic World, and we would try to see who knew more facts about certain dinosaurs. I was upset that we didn't get to see any pachycephalosaurs in this, but, you know, whatever. It's fine.
Okay.
Just because, like, they... Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, I like this movie. I like the fact that this is, like, legitimately the first Jurassic Park film that really brings up the fact that these are, like, animals.
Mm.
Like, even the first film... It's like funny, Roger Ebert had a lot of the issues with the first film that people seem to have with this one in terms of like maybe the characters are flat. You know, maybe it's like goes too quickly into the action. But in the first film, you know, they weren't animals. Like they were there to serve the plot and they were attacking everything at all times. But in this one, they made a real point of like having Chris Pratt there saying like these aren't just things that you're controlling. They have needs and wants and they're going to act in a way that nature dictates. And I found mm-hmm. that refreshing in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because it is, it's kind of like when you go to the zoo and people tap on the glass
right.
to get a gorilla's attention. It's like, I hope that gorilla just rips you to pieces. I don't know. I have a very weird thing about like when I go to, I'm very weird about zoos in general. And animals kept in captivity where people just like throw stuff into like the animal pens and like yell stuff at the animals. I'm like, I don't know. I think that kind of hit me a little bit, especially the petting zoo scene.
Oh my God, that was so cute.
It was kind of cute, but it was also like baby dinosaurs.
when that I don't even know what it is. It's the long necked one.
The brontosaurus.
Gets hugged. Yeah. It gets hugged and you can tell. Hell, it's like, no, I don't want this.
It has the same look on its face that my dog has on her face when she gets hugged. People always want to hug my dog, and then she just looks at me with like these wide eyes like, oh God, why is this happening again? It was so cute, though. Like, the little girl hugs the dinosaur, and then they like feed the baby Brachiosaurus, and like their hands are covered in its saliva, and they're like, ew.
I know, I like that, actually.
Yeah.
It was cute. It was adorable.
But it's kind of like that moral question of, I mean, these are basically enslaved animals.
Right. But and the funny thing is they talk about that in this movie. They're like, these are our biological creations. And even John Hammond in the first films called them living biological attractions.
One of the things that I found kind of curious about this film is Chris Pratt's kind of his whole mentality kind of seems to be that, okay, we got to let these animals kind of breathe and kind of live amongst their own and kind of, you know, get subjected to, okay, you know, how does this kind of system work? You're supposed to be friends with, you know, some of your playmates and things like that, you know,
right.
like otherwise it just knows I'm just going to eat and I'm just going to attack everything.
Right. They talk about the Indominus Rex as though it's like an abuse victim that's lashing out.
Well, yeah. And it's kind of like when you go, and again, I'm going to bring up zoos, but it's kind of like when you go and you see a tiger by itself in a pen and it's basically pacing.
Yep.
Because what does it have?
Right. It doesn't have a social structure.
Yeah.
It doesn't have like an actual habitat to live into. I mean, like.
And that's the thing that I was kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing that I was kind of like bringing up is the fact that the Jurassic Park kind of mentality brings up a very weird dynamic in that you can't let these animals out to live on their own. Like, that's just never going to be something that you know, is going to happen. So it's
right,
like, okay.
Spent millions of dollars bringing a brontosaurus to life. You're not going to let the T-Rex kill it and eat it.
Well, no, I'm not even saying let them interact with each other. I'm saying you're not going to let it out into the wild, period. Like, there is no possibility of that happening in like a normal kind of civilized world, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
you're not just going to be like pterodactyls. Go have fun.
It's not like taking. Yeah. It's not like reintroducing a lion into the wilderness.
Exactly.
You're not going to take a T-Rex and bring it to Montana, where they used to live, and be like, free, go.
But at the same time, though, I almost feel like, now that you're bringing it up, Bill, that kind of makes me feel like the first movie was victorious, because it's these dinosaurs reclaiming their freedom.
In a way, though, but they're
12 years
even then, they're still on an island, right?
Oh, Brian.
Oh, wow. It just went dark.
Oh, Jesus.
But I mean, it's true. That's how the final, that's how the second movie ended, was actually John Hammond making an impassioned plea on network television to leave Isla Sorna, Site B, alone so that these animals can exist independently in their own ecosystem. Of course, this is after a movie in which we've watched literally every single one of the dinosaurs that they came into contact with try to kill someone. Even the Stegosauruses take a couple swipes at Julianne Moore. Like, you don't get the adorable, like, oh, we're stuck in a tree and there's a Brachiosaurus scene in the second one. Yeah. Like, it's just pure terror all the time. And, so it's a little difficult to see them in that way. Up until this film, I feel. Because Chris Pratt, you know, is working with the Velociraptors. And he's actually, like, talking about how, you know, he doesn't control them. You know, he's worked himself into their social structure.
He imprinted on them.
Right.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that word, I think of Twilight.
Yeah. You think of Twilight. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people didn't know what imprinting meant until that movie, and they were forced to look it up.
Yeah, because they're like, why is this guy staring at a baby?
Ooh.
I still haven't seen the movie, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
But so, anyway. I guess, so we all seem to enjoy this movie.
Are we not doing singular reviews? I think you kind of did your part. How are we doing this?
I guess, I don't know. We started talking and the conversation was flowing naturally. I guess I'll say that I enjoyed the new focus on the dinosaurs as animals, even at the same time they bring up that they were genetically modified. They're not true dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's what he says at one point. He says, that's not a dinosaur. And I was like, well, then what the fuck is it? Pratt?
There's a point in the third movie where Alan Grant makes the same statement. He's like, you know, the creatures there were not dinosaurs. And like,
They say, B.D. Wong mentions it as well. He says to the character of Vincent D'Onofrio, he basically says, you know, you could have allowed me to make these creatures 100% dino, and you didn't. Basically told me.
His monologue is, his monologue is very central to this film,
and
I feel like.
Dark as shit.
It is. He makes an extremely good point. Like, when he showed up, I thought he was just going to be like, oh, look, it's B.D. Wong from the first movie. Isn't that crazy? Like, I thought he was just going to be this total, like, sight, like, reference. But instead, I was like, he's actually a pretty central character, and he actually brings up an amazing point about the film. And so, I don't know. And I think this film is, like, it's so strange because this film is incredibly, like you said, Bill, it's just a fun movie. And it's Colin Trevorrow. This is only his second movie, right?
I think he's done some short films, but yeah, other than Safety Not Guaranteed, this is like his first or his follow up to that. So yeah, I think it's his second feature length film.
So for this to be his second feature length film, and I know people have issues with this film, I completely understand that. I'm kind of impressed.
I'm impressed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like. I mean, to have this as your second movie, I don't know. I gotta say, I think he did an amazing job.
I agree. We'll be able to talk about it even more in spoilers.
Okay.
Question that Amanda asked. Are we still doing personal reviews? Because I kept trying to say something and then people kept adding on. And I'm fine with that. I love the interplay, guys.
You're the one who says Bill, and now Amanda. Now I'm gonna do it. I don't know, Brian. This is your show, man.
Dude, You are the BD Wong right now.
It doesn't feel like my show anymore. BD Wong talks about, like, he has that speech where he's like, you know, you're the one. First of all, in the first movie, they even said we spliced in frog DNA to fill in the gaps. So, like, they've never been 100% dinosaurs. And then he says, you know, we've genetically modified them to not even look like they're supposed to look because that's not what people expect them to look like, which is true, because now we know that dinosaurs actually may have been brightly colored and had feathers. And no one wants to see that shit, right?
Nope.
I do.
I don't.
Nope.
Not in a Jurassic Park film.
Brightly colored dinosaur.
You go out and you make your own damn film if that's what you want.
I will.
And, you know, he says, like, you know, this isn't real and I did what you asked me. You asked for bigger, you asked for scary, and I goddamn did it. And I'm like, all right, BD, you got it. Henry Wu.
Love him.
This is his character name.
But it's a star.
And he hasn't aged at all.
Not really, no.
Not even a little bit.
He's been sucking on that dino DNA.
Yeah, he's been getting some of his own gene therapy. And then I found the kids to be, you know, no worse than the kids in the original movie.
Is the younger one named Joel Courtney? What's his name? He looks like the kid from Super 8.
The younger one, Ty Simpkins?
Oh, is that his name?
Yeah, Ty Simpkins. Okay. I'm trying to remember what film he was in. He's a young character in he's in Iron Man 3.
Oh, he was the kid in Iron Man 3.
He is just an adorable little moppet.
And Insidious.
This isn't a spoiler because it doesn't involve dinosaurs.
What?
I was trying to think of what I was about to say as a spoiler. Like, their parents are getting a divorce. And the older son doesn't want to deal with it, doesn't seem to care. The younger son, played by Ty Simpkins, he has this heartbreaking moment where he's like, I'm going to be alone. You know, you're going to college. You don't care, but they're going to separate. And what am I supposed to do? And it was like, it was a really kind of heart-wrenching because I have a younger brother. And I know that there are times when, like, you know, your worldview is completely different. And I thought that was effective. I found it enough to make me care about whether or not they lived or died. And I like the fact that after being a huge dick for most of the movie, the older brother kind of, like, decided to man up and actually do a thing.
Yeah, I thought their character... I know you said, Bill, that you thought they were kind of boring. I actually thought their character arc was a lot more solid than... Or their character arcs were a lot more solid than, say, Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard's, because they do have, like you said, the older brother is just so, he's a typical, like, disconnected teenager, and this little boy is, he's such a sensitive little man.
Do you need to take a second, Amanda?
When he starts crying, I was like, this kid is selling the shit out of the scene.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah,
he
is
actually a fantastic little actor.
Like, I honestly, if they had given him, like, take the older brother character away and just give him, like, a younger assistant that's just trying to, like, you know, do really good and work his way up the ladder, I would have been much happier, because it may have given Ty or his character Gray, like, an actual someone to actually rebound off of.
So, like, take away the just like a wall personal assistant, turn it into an anxious 20-year-old intern, and then get rid of the older brother. I watched that movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's an idea for the sequel.
That is much better.
And, like, every time that they were in trouble, the assistant could say, oh, I'm totally going to get fired. And then the final line of the movie could be Bryce Dallas Howard hugging him, being like, thank you for getting my nephew back. And then the intern could say, does this mean I'm going to get a good reference? Cut
then
to credits.
Laugh, and then freeze.
But guys, we should become screenwriters.
Dudes, let's do it.
I'm game.
All right, sweet.
So
Jurassic Office.
Colin Trevorrow, if you're making the second movie, call us. Jurassic Universe. But yeah,
Jurassic Land.
Jurassic Continent.
Jurassic Euro Jurassic Land.
Euro Jurassic Land.
But
we're gonna try. Fifth time's the charm, guys. Fifth time's the charm.
Oh my god, Jurassic Ocean. They could go underwater with the Massasaurus.
Oh no, don't let that thing out.
Can we get a plesiosaur in there too?
All right, sure, why not? Was that Nessie? Nessie, please?
Yes, that's what Nessie is.
You're just making shit up now.
What if that is the fifth movie? It's like, oh, Nessie actually is an escaped Euro-Jurassic Land animal.
Oh my god! That's like some sci-fi original movie shit right there.
That's true.
That I would probably watch. But yeah, I don't know. It was so strange too because like I thought the boys... Like there was a point where I thought, oh, their relationship, because the whole idea of it is that these two young boys go to Jurassic World because their aunt Claire, who is played by Bryce Dallas Howard, is, I don't know if she is like the director of the park.
She seems to be. Yeah. The Irfan Khan, who plays Simon Masrani, is mm-hmm. basically like the CEO. And I guess she is the
like operations manager.
Yeah, she's like the COO.
Which, by the way, that guy was amazing.
He is, and there is a moment early in the film where I literally like clinched in terror because I thought he was going to wreck his helicopter like 5 minutes into the film. It was like I don't know if they did that with like an actual helicopter or if they did that with CGI, but whatever it was, the effect really worked on me because I had like an intense amount of terror that he was actually going to die.
Before the Indominus Rex is even out of its pen, you're really worried about Irfan Khan.
Which, by the way, I forgot. I bring an interesting perspective on this film.
You watched it in D-Box.
I watched it with D-Box and 3D, which you have to watch it with 3D and D-Box. Which, by the way, D-Box, not a good name. Very suggestive.
What does the D stand for?
Put my dick in a box.
I was about
to tell. I think it's dynamic. I kind of forget.
Dynamism.
It's probably like a business word.
Yeah, that sounds like a dinosaur.
So D-Box, for those who are unfamiliar, D-Box is a service you can get at any, like most movie theater chains, I think, carry it now, where it's basically like what you would experience at Universal Studios, where you go on one of those virtual reality rides with the chairs that move with the film that you're watching.
Hold on. You just said that this is available at most movie theaters.
I don't know that I've ever been to a movie theater that has a D-Box.
Yeah.
Wait, where are you at?
I'm in D.C.
I'm in Dallas, and I don't think I've been offered this before.
Look it up, man. You might have it. You'd be surprised.
Okay, so this is a service that you personally rent?
It's basically... No, it's something that, like, there are theaters that have it, and they have it in... There'll be, like, one particular, like...
Auditorium, yeah.
Yeah, that will have it. And there, it will specify, if you look up a film, like, on Fandango or whatever, it'll give you the option of buying D-Box tickets. So... It's basically, if you go into a movie theater, like some movie theaters, like the auditoriums will have like a weird couple rows of seats that look different from the rest of the seats.
Incredible.
It is like...
It is
so,
not in Washington, D.C.
I'm shocked that it's not in Washington, D.C.
I am looking at a list on Wikipedia of D-Box enabled cinemas and it's not in Washington.
Is it in Dallas?
I will take a look.
So how would we have it in Pittsburgh?
It's not in Dallas.
Damn it.
Wow. Well. I guess Pittsburgh's not so bad, huh?
According
Brian?
To this, it doesn't have it in Pittsburgh either. So I think you might be lying. Or this is a very shitty list that I seem to have here.
Well, I just went to, I think it was a Cinemark that I went to, and they had it, and we were thinking about doing it for Mad Max, and I was like, I think my face would melt if we did Mad Max.
Cinemark is based in Dallas. Like their corporate headquarters is in
you
Plano.
Have to have it. I'm telling you, Bill, you have to have this. Anyway, I don't want to waste any more time. I don't waste too much time. So we saw this with D-Box, and it's basically like you're doing like a 2-hour virtual reality ride. And it's very, I was actually impressed with how accurate the movement was, because it's basically, I mean, there's a lot, it's like the chair actually moves, like the scene where they're on the boat going to the island.
This would be so distracting for anybody else not in the D-Box, like looking at you, like they would just look at you and think you're having like a seizure.
They know it's the D-bot, because you know there were people in the theater, which it's like being the only sober person at a party of the drunk people. It's like being the person who doesn't get the D-box seats in the theater, because everyone who's in the D-box seats, we were like, oh, like we're all having such an amazing time. And like, it is, you can actually adjust the intensity of the seats. So like, you can have it, like my fiance was sitting next to me and he put his all the way up, and he said he actually had like a little bit of whiplash afterwards.
Damn.
And like, it moves, and like when the dinosaur like steps down, like you'll feel like a vibration, and it's actually it feels very immersive. Like, it doesn't feel weird or distracting or unnatural. And I will say that like it most definitely enhanced my experience. Like, if I had watched just Jurassic World without the D-box seats, I don't think I would have enjoyed it nearly as much. Like, wow. It was so fun.
Well, I watched it without D-box and I still enjoyed the hell out of it.
I think I would have enjoyed it, but like watching it with D-Box was just, like I said, it's like you're on a 2-hour long virtual reality ride, and it is fantastic.
I was sitting in the press section. I saw this at a press screening, and it was, luckily there were members of the public there as well.
Mm-hmm. But luckily, no. Luckily. Those people are the worst. Down here, we call them pass holes, because they wait for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wait for an hour and a half to go see a free movie, and a lot of times they don't even know what the movie is, and they'll come in and loud and obnoxious, and the movie starts, heaven forbid, the movie starts like 5 or 10 minutes late, they'll start like cheering and like ranting and just going crazy. And it's like, you didn't pay for any of this. You need to settle down.
Okay, well, that's not a problem here that I've ever encountered.
No, not Pittsburgh either.
The reason I say luckily is because movie critics, ladies and gentlemen at home, are like the most stoic, like non-responsive crowd ever. And I am not like that. I still love watching movies. So when I see something in this film and I like, you know, rock back in my seat and go, oh my God, that was awesome, I don't want to be sitting around a bunch of people who are just staring blankly at the screen. This exact same thing happened at my To the Wonder screening, actually.
Whoa,
where I was the only person who appeared actually like emotionally invested in the film, and everyone else was kind of like, whatever. And then the second that the movie was over, they just like beelined out of there, and I was just like, come on, guys.
So, and you were just weeping into your shirt.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that's like when I went to see The Master, and I didn't go to a press screening, but I went to an independent movie theater in Pittsburgh with a lot of very serious moviegoers. So serious, we have to go see this P.T. Anderson movie. But I laugh the entire time during The Master. I think it's like an incredible dark comedy.
Oh yeah.
And everyone is just sitting there. I was the only person laughing, and everyone was looking at me like I was an asshole. And
it's,
I was just like,
imagine seeing a movie and the only other person in the theater is 100 Nick Newmans.
Oh no!
Love you and miss you, Nick.
Here's the thing: like, I have a place in this world. I have a group of a pretty good group of friends that are all Dallas press members, and so like most of the time, I see a lot of familiar faces when I go to the press screenings here in Dallas, and I don't have that issue because most of the people that I, you know, associate with end up being the people that are, you know, into the movies. So
that's cool.
Okay, well, that's good. The reason we're talking about this is because I was really excited because I cheered at certain points, clapped at certain points, and I was glad that the public was there with me. Because, you know,
it wasn't crickets.
I can keep that shit under control, but like when I'm seeing a movie like this or Furious 7, I want to be able to stamp my feet and go, fuck yeah, out loud.
I stamp my feet in this movie. During the climax, I stamped my feet.
The climax, I was like, it made me feel like a 7-year-old again, in all honesty. I was really happy with this film.
We should probably talk a little bit. We should probably just go into spoilers, because we obviously want to.
Yeah, we should go into spoilers. We'll talk about the plot of the film more.
Can I have one last thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love how y'all both answered that like you're my parents.
Bill?
My divorced parents sitting on different parts of the
Use your words.
Use your words. Amanda, anyways, let the boy speak.
So how game are we with the CG of the dinosaurs?
I would say there were times when it was like it wasn't great, but it's never bad.
So I actually, I thought it was interesting that when it was up close, I thought it looked really great. It was when it was a long shot that it looked less convincing.
I will get behind that as well, yes.
Yeah, when they were, like, the scenes where they had the raptors in those, puzzles.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah,
I was like, I almost didn't know if it was like a puppet that was augmented with CG.
It might actually be like the eyes may not move in the puppet itself, but you know, maybe they have like green eyes, like
reptile eyes.
Yeah. And so they just kind of keep those kind of covered up. But other than that, yeah, I thought a lot of the close up stuff looked really good. Some of the animal petting zoo kind of stuff looked eh. But, yeah. You know, look, if you give me a baby triceratops, I'm game. Like, I love
I'm totally
that.
Cool with that.
Little saddles.
But, you know, for a film, I still think if you watch Jurassic Park on the big screen and they had it, you know, remastered in 3D recently, if you watch
so
that
good.
Film in 3D up on the big screen, it still looks so much better than anything in this film.
It's like, I mean, that's like, something we can say about literally every film ever. Like, yeah. Jurassic Park just looks the best of anything.
Yeah.
It looks, yeah, because I saw the 3D Jurassic Park remaster, and it was like, they did not screw around with this. It looked amazing.
Well, that's because, really, and this is a thing that I'm sure everyone out there has heard a lot, but they used a lot of practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
They did a little bit in this film, which I liked, because some of the other films they've just gone straight CG.
Exactly.
But I, you know, they did it in this film, and I think that I think that it was fine.
Well, and I will say something too, Brian.
Starship Troopers is another one with the
oof. Oh man,
you don't think that's held up?
No. That one held up so well.
Yeah, the CG in Starship Troopers is good. And again, they use a lot of practical effects in that as well.
I never watched that film until
what?
I saw it as. Oh. So here's the thing: I watched it recently with riff tracks.
Oh no!
And
I don't know how I feel about your first experience being that.
Oh, it was fine. Being a 30-year-old woman watching Starship Troopers, it was like, this should be with riff tracks.
You say so.
It's not a good movie.
What?
It's great. It's a perfect satire.
Good. It's so good.
No.
Okay. You know what?
We're not going to.
We're scrapping the rest of the podcast. We're going to talk about Starship Troopers.
We got to work through some stuff.
A Hannibal episode.
Please spare me talking about Starship Troopers.
Okay, so
good.
They're all Brazilian guys.
Anyway. It's making, you know what? It's a fascist future in which basically Nazis are in.
No, don't.
Anyway, let's move on.
Mom and Dad are arguing.
I swear to God, Amanda, it's week to week with you.
I wasted the best years of my life on you.
Oh, right. God, you sound just like your mother.
Okay. So, spoiler time?
Yeah, I was about to say, I think you can tell from the way that we've kind of dipped around excitedly that we all seem to enjoy this movie. Not as good as Jurassic Park, but a very strong film. I would say definitely many cuts above The Lost World or Jurassic Park.
Oh,
well,
yes.
Let's not even.
It's memorable, obviously.
Yeah. So, spoilers. We'll talk about a little bit of plot. We'll see if we had any problems. We'll talk about more awesome scenes. And it'll be fun. You know what? You know what, Bill? I'm starting to realize we can't have you on this podcast ever because we are almost an hour into this already. It's just like Mad Max all over again.
Well, with Results was such a
yeah, that was a really slight film. So
there wasn't much to say about it.
Okay, well, let's talk about spoilers for Jurassic World.
Yeah, let's do it.
Thing that I loved. We finally get the money shot in the trailer where Chris Pratt is going to use the velociraptors to try to hunt the Indominus Rex. And this is something that D'Onofrio has been gunning for. We didn't even mention Vincent D'Onofrio's
so,
in this.
Can I just... So is D'Onofrio...
I mentioned him.
Okay,
you
good.
Did mention him. Is D'Onofrio, like, the character Newman? Is he supposed to be that character?
He's sort of like the new Nedry, yes.
There is that scene where he goes up to Jake Johnson, and it's a scene where they send... And he's like, looks like the fox is in the hen house. Yeah. And Jake Johnson is like, who is this weirdo?
And he keeps doing it throughout the film. Like he keeps like leaning over his shoulder. At one point, I think he grabs Jake Johnson's like soda can. And I'm just like, Jake Johnson should just be like, hey, man, can you give me a little space?
The
just
look of discomfort was such that I was like, what if D'Onofrio just like decided to do that as a character choice and it's not even in the script?
I love when he tells that wolf pup story. I actually took
I like that.
I was just like, oh, D'Onofrio, you will never not be creepy.
Yeah,
ever.
He's a weird fucking guy. He wants to use basically velociraptors as soldiers.
Which, yes. Oh my god. So
Zero Dark Velociraptor. Velosa Dark 30.
So do you guys know about the original concept for this film?
Yes.
About
whoa.
Oh, Bill, you
don't
know about
this? You said yes way too fast.
Sorry.
Keep going.
So originally, one of the first ideas they had for this film was that they were going to have it in I don't know, I almost think of it as a RoboCop world where they create these basically military figures or police figures who are dinosaur human hybrids.
Yes.
Oh, whoa.
And there's concept art where they all just look like Danzig.
Google it. There is concept art. It's amazing.
This sounds insane.
When they steal what's like Vincent D'Onofrio gets killed.
Yeah, he does.
But his military men get away with those with the,
all the
DNA.
Embryos. Yeah.
Oh, the embryos.
With Dr. Wu.
Dr. Wu. So I was like, is the next movie going
to... Is it
going to
be that?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
You're so excited right now.
I was so... When that happened, I was like, I want to talk to somebody about this right now. Like, as soon as we left the theater, I was like, Ian, my fiance, I was like, Ian, they're going to do the RoboCop dinosaur movie. Like,
I'm excited to see where it goes from here. But, there's so many things. I wrote down a bunch of notes because I was honestly expecting someone on this podcast not to like this movie. But I guess I don't have to worry about that.
Nope.
I do have some issues, though, but go
ahead.
One
of the things that a lot of reviews said, I'll say this because we talked about Vincent D'Onofrio getting a chomp. A lot of reviews called this either exceedingly brutal or surprisingly bloodless.
The film itself?
Yeah.
I thought someone mentioned earlier that the female character deaths in this film are drawn out much more than the male character deaths, and I thought that was kind of interesting, except for there's like one female that gets killed, but her death is like really, really brutal and weird and like drawn out to a point where you're like, is this still going on?
And it also felt being an assistant is hard, guys. Being a personal assistant is hell on earth. Yeah. So for her to die that way almost felt like, oh, come on.
Like,
maybe Trevorrow didn't have a very good relationship with his...
He got really pissed off at his PA on this film and was like, you see that? That's what's going to happen to you, you bastard.
But
no,
it was
true. She does suffer like the worst death because she's harassed by a pterodon. And then...
Yeah.
Lifted up by it finally, and then it's basically like dunking her in the water constantly, trying to lift her up and kill her. And so at first it thought she was just going to drown, and then it finally lifts her up, and then the Mosasaur leaps up and eats them both.
Oh.
It was fucked up.
That was actually, and it was, I was the surprisingly bloodless thing, I will say, is kind of true. Because there, even when there were the big crowds of extras being attacked, you saw them getting picked up by either the pterodactyls or the pterodons. But they would be dropped after, like, you know, they after a couple feet.
Well, because I don't think these animals can lift a human. Like, I
they definitely like grabbed some people and carried them away. I remember seeing someone was like picked up at one point and like. And or no, not picked up, but like landed upon and just like mauled by like two or three of them. But yeah, look, this is a PG-13 movie.
My thing is, you know, to me, it was a lot more brutal than Jurassic Park.
It was.
Yeah.
So it was just weird.
Weirdly.
Yeah, it was weird looking at like the critical consensus on this is very difficult to reach. I will say that Vincent D'Onofrio's death was pretty messed up.
Nah. Yeah.
It snaps down on his arm, and that was...
I'm okay with it.
For some reason, that... More than having a velociraptor leap on someone and then obviously, like, destroy them, having it bite his arm first, for some reason, to me, seemed a lot more intense.
But that was actually narratively made sense, because remember when he's telling the wolf pup story... It takes a chunk out of his wife's or ex-wife's arm, and then the raptor takes the chunk out of his arm.
And then eats the rest of him.
Yeah, which is fine.
And oh, right. So like I was saying, like when Chris Pratt is going to ride in with the dinos, which is an awesome scene, and I love his relationship with those raptors. And the raptors finally meet the Indominus Rex, and then it talks to them.
Yeah, and you're like, uh-oh, this
and then
is not going well.
You see their night vision cameras all trained on Chris Pratt, and this is right after his buddy, played by Omar Sy, had said what they look at, they usually are looking to eat. And I was
I didn't notice that kind of
oh,
line.
No. I was like, that's a definite, they did that on purpose, and it was awesome.
I liked the multi-cam or the multi, because before when they're going after the Indominus Rex originally and they send that team out, they all have sensors
just like heart,
so you can see
monitors.
Their heart.
Yeah.
And every time they die, it cuts back and forth. So every time they die, it flatlines. I thought that was an amazing effect.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
Yeah, and they did that with the multi, with the night vision too. Mm-hmm. I thought that was actually really
see
clever.
The people like getting dragged behind them. And
There's The multicam just plays really well because, you know, they're sitting there in the control room and they have all of these monitors up in front of them. And when the pterodons are attacking all the people, you can just see like all of these different monitors and just seeing like just chaos, just absolute chaos.
Which I thought it was really good. It was a good way to portray everything.
Yeah, there was a lot of like heat sensors or night vision or, you know, it. Yeah, I kind of liked that it was so it had so many different little like gadgety things that played into it.
And here's something. So I felt a lot more for the dinosaur characters than I did for the human characters, and I don't think I don't think that's an accident.
Well, I think this plays into our discussion we had before about the post-human blockbuster.
Yeah.
And I think this is definitely like Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla.
In that Dissolve article. Yeah.
I would agree.
Or,
I mean,
or
like,
even Planet of the, or what Dawn of Rise of the Planet of
Dawn
the Apes.
Dawn of the Rise of the Afternoon of the Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
Worst movie titles ever.
I still can't remember which is which. So what I'm saying, like, so when we see the dying Brontosaurus. I was moved.
Okay.
I was a little moved.
I was moved during that, but when they showed the field of dead Brontosaurus, I was like, whoa, man.
I was so sad. I was like almost in tears. And then when I saw a pterodactyl trying to lift up one of the saddled Triceratops babies.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, no. I was like, if they show that thing taking off with that Triceratops, I'm going to be pissed. But luckily, again... These are very weak animals, and
yes,
they're going after prey that is way too large for them.
Well, and that's the thing, like you said, I did feel more for the dinosaurs, and I think it was on purpose, because like in Godzilla, the human characters are just so without personality.
Yeah.
Whereas in this movie, I feel like they are so over the top stereotypes.
Which I'm fine with. And I like that because it helps me focus more on the dinosaurs.
Exactly.
Like, I had a real connection with the Velociraptor team that he had.
Yeah, I love them.
We're in spoilers.
Blue and Charlie.
When Blue comes back, it was awesome.
Yeah.
He races back in slow motion.
You can like seat it slide and then like get traction and you're like, yes.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, because he got thrown into a wall and I was like, oh no, Blue, like I don't want him to die, and he didn't. He fucking made it, and he came back and he kicked ass and it was great.
We should probably set this up a little bit more. So when the final sequence is, they're trying to escape, so it's just the core characters, it's Pratt, Dallas Howard, and the two boys. They go back to, I guess it's kind of like the first movie, like the information center.
Yeah, the visitor's compound.
Visitor's compound. And they're being chased by the Indominus Rex. Chris Pratt ends up he makes Blue understand, like, I'm on your side. Blue and the other two raptors start attacking the Indominus Rex because they love Chris Pratt.
Well, what happens is they turn on Chris Pratt. He makes a point of, like, I don't control them. It's about respect.
Exactly.
But then the military puts these head cams on them. And what Chris Pratt does to get the respect back is to take the head cam off of the raptor.
Off of Blue.
Right. He's like, go, you're all cool, Blue. And Blue's like, you know what, bro? You're all right.
Yeah.
If they had put subtitles on him like they did for the dog in Beginners, this movie only could have been better.
Oh my god, I kind of want that now.
I'm gonna do a fan cut.
One thing that I found really interesting about Chris Pratt's character was that he kept on, they show him early on in the film training the raptors, and he's using like a clicker.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting because they do seem to bring in a lot of like animal psychology into this film, and I don't know if it's pseudoscience, I don't know if it's actually like real, or how much, you know, where's that fine line, but I thought it was interesting that they're using this clicker because it seems to function as something beyond just, you know, giving commands. And it's like, and he uses it once the raptors are out of the pens. I don't think he uses it anymore after that point. But otherwise, he's using it throughout like the training process. And I thought that was very interesting that it kind of brought like a sense of reality to this very obviously like, okay, like really? You're going to train raptors? But it's like, maybe.
I thought it was good. I really liked that entire, I guess you could call it a subplot of him and the raptors.
Well, and it's also, I had a note where I said I'd love to see a Blackfish style parody documentary about giraffes.
Oh yeah, I was thinking about that throughout this film, that this film comes into a weird kind of cultural space where, you know, we're very anti, you know, zoos and things like that right now.
Yeah.
And you know, they do nothing to kind of shy away from keeping these animals very obviously in captivity. Like at one point they have this dinosaur that's gotten out of its like specific area that it's supposed to be in.
Right.
And so they trank it. And I think it's Dallas Howard's character that is like, can't that animal be moved faster? And it's like, no, like,
yeah,
I don't like,
the one technician is like, no. That one, like, really bookish looking technician.
Yeah. I was looking at my notes, and I have the Indominus Rex is like Apple Maps or Zune that can eat you. Because it is, in a way. It's a newest technological development that's made to, like, make money, but it can eat you because that's how bad it sucks. I think the note that I like the most of mine is that this movie literally has nostalgia killing the newer, bigger, badder creature that is markedly more like Bananas, but definitely not as good.
Guys, I thought she was down for the count for a second there.
The T-Rex?
I really
when,
did. I really liked it.
Yeah, okay, wait. So let's just say when the raptors aren't getting the job done enough on the D-Rex, and in fact, it looks as though it has killed all of them, they bring out the T-Rex. So
that,
Bryce Dallas Howard.
And the way that she brings it out is with a flare, which I was just like, yes. Like, this is such a perfect callback to the first film with the flares.
And it's like Olympian when she's running away from it and it's chasing her.
In high heels,
which, bless her heart.
This is one thing that I kind of noticed is that they don't look like high heels the entire time.
Oh, they're nude, that's why.
Well, no, that's not what I mean. I'm saying they look like the high heel part of it has broken off at some point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's an interesting little feminist. Did they get Eve Ensler to write this movie too?
Something tells me not.
So it would have been cool if during that scene where she does that funny, like, rolling up her sleeves.
Oh,
and,
my
like,
God, that was perfect.
Like, trying to look like Laura Dern in the first film.
I love that. I love that it's like, what? I don't understand what that means. It's like, this means I'm, like, ready for action. I'm like, oh, just like Laura Dern.
Yeah, and then it would have been cool if she got her shoes and ripped off the stems. But she never does that.
But that, wouldn't that make them harder to walk in?
No.
Would they
they're
flatten,
still arched upwards. Okay, they wouldn't
would
be flat.
Would they flatten now?
Brian, listen.
Okay.
No, they would be. I mean, they wouldn't be like the most amazing, comfortable pair of shoes, but yeah, she could still walk in them.
Okay. Well, yeah, I like that this movie. A lot of people have brought up like gender politics in relation to this movie. So let me just say my piece. I thought that between her running in the heels and her like rolling up her sleeves and doing all that. I mean, like, she hasn't changed who she is just because of her wardrobe. I mean, like, they're treating her as a businesswoman who's presenting herself in a certain way. But, like, you bring her down to the nitty gritty, she gets shit done.
She shoots that pterodon.
She fucking shoots that pterodon like 16 times.
She does.
She bludgeons it and then just shoots it repeatedly.
It's great.
And I liked it. I liked it a lot. I didn't have
to save her man.
Right. I mean, she saves his life. I don't think he really saves her life in any, like, direct way like she saves his in that moment.
No.
And then towards the end of the movie, when they're like, hey, we're protagonists in an action film, we should date. He says we should stay together for survival. It's not stick with me and I'll keep you alive. It's together we will live.
Yeah, and like I said before, they're such over-the-top stereotypes. It's almost like you can't get offended because they're just like any
she's not Willy from fucking Temple of Doom. I mean,
yeah. Oh, God, no.
You want to talk about a regressive gender dynamic?
I would not. I can't watch that movie. Terrible. But yeah, but she's not like, but they're just so, and it's almost kind of a play. Like they said, there was that whole debacle about like, oh, this is such a like 70s sexist scene, the thing where she goes to meet him at his trailer and recruit him to help them out with Indominus Rex. And like, yeah, it is, but it's so backwards it's almost like you just kind of roll your eyes and say, eh, whatever.
And he's being just as big of a stereotype as she is.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's like, ooh, let me work on this World War II era motorcycle I have and drink a Coke out of a bottle. I mean,
By the way, that motorcycle's not that old at all.
It looked like a they were like, it's a Triumph, right? I mean, like,
yeah, it's a Triumph Scrambler, which came out in like 2002 or something.
Right, but
like
I
that.
Mean, like, Triumphs are like the motorcycles everyone like sees in the old War II things. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
the trappings
of that scene are like, let's just make a movie that would have been made in the 50s.
Like, look at my boy stuff. Oh, look at this.
And,
it's like I live in a trailer. I'm so hot.
Yeah, the T-Rex comes out, starts fighting with the Indominus Rex. Looks like the Indominus Rex is going to win. And then there's our boy Blue.
Comes running out. Music swells.
Dude, I was so nervous for that T-Rex because, like you said, it really looked like it was dead for a second.
Yeah, it was getting beaten up. And
but you know what? There was a part of me that knew that wouldn't happen because. And here's my favorite callback to a previous Jurassic Park film in this movie.
You when mean the only Jurassic Park film in this movie?
I mean, there's a lot of... Yeah, pretty much. So, no, actually, this is the third film. There's a callback. It's not even a callback.
No,
it's more like a winking in-joke.
I'm saying that the only film it's calling back to is basically the first one.
Yes.
The first one, yeah.
But in this, the thing I'm about to talk about is actually from the third one.
Oh, oh really?
Yeah. So when the Jurassic Park, when the T-Rex...
I don't remember the third one, remember?
Yes, but when the T-Rex is running out of its paddock following Bryce Dallas Howard, it smashes through a skeleton. The skeleton that it smashes through appears to my eyes to be a Spinosaur.
Ah,
which really? Is like,
fuck the third movie and killing off the T-Rex.
No.
Yes, I swear to God. It smashes through that giant skeleton, and it looks like a Spinosaur skeleton. It looks like it has the fin. It looks like it's got the alligator-like face.
Oh. I have to... Oh, now I really want to rewatch just that part to see.
Yep.
Not to mention that's a good fight scene.
I'm about to Google that shit. It really is a good fight
scene. That fight was fantastic.
The two bigger ones, the I-Rex and the D-Rex, are fighting... Or the T-Rex are fighting each other. And the Velociraptor, like, is biting, then jumps on the T-Rex to jump back onto the I-Rex to just, like, get a better vantage point. And it's, like, a little, like, tag team thing going on. It was great.
And what's so great about that, too, is that it was a long take.
Oh, yeah.
There was no cuts whatsoever, which I appreciate because it's very much a Michael Bay thing to just sort of, like, hyper-cut. Just hyper edit everything to the point where you don't know what's going
on.
Where this is
like
one long take.
Yeah, when you've had people sitting in a movie theater for like an hour and 50 minutes and you finally give us a T-Rex and a Velociraptor fighting the Indominus Rex. I mean, you gotta linger on that.
And then, of course, the big finale.
Oh my God, I was so happy.
Which I was just like, because they kept showing that thing in the trailer. Is it the Mosasaur or Mosasaur?
I think it's Mosasaur.
Mosasaur.
It's very obvious to me that IMDb needs a section specifically for like the Jurassic films where they just list all of the dinosaurs. That would be very helpful. Thank
and
you.
The played by would just be like a line.
By herself.
Blue playing herself. Charlie playing himself.
Because we were like, my fiance and I were sitting there. And we're getting so hyped during the whole thing. And they get to the point where they've been fighting the I-Rex, and they get him to the edge of something, and it's like, oh my God.
I know.
It's gonna happen.
I was like on the edge of my seat through the whole fight scene, and then when he breaks the barrier and is like standing right on the edge of the water tank, I started bouncing my seat going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
I stamped my feet. I like put my fists and stamp my feet.
And then it killed it. And I was like, yes. And then the T-Rex and the Raptor kind of look at each other. And it's like the end of Fast and Furious 5. When when The Rock and Vin Diesel kind of are like, we cool. We're cool for now. And then they like go in their separate directions.
Two dinosaur sized humans saying goodbye.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which, and I will say, so I mean, I'm not like a humongous, like I'm not like, oh, Jurassic Park is my favorite movie or anything like that. But it does hold a special place in my heart.
Right. And I think this movie does a good job of honoring that, like especially through
exactly.
Like Jake Johnson wearing the T-shirt.
Oh,
I love that.
Johnson's like the nerd, sad nerd.
I also have a list of other callbacks that I'd like to bring to mind.
So many.
Can I bring up one thing that I found really odd that a friend actually brought up?
Yes.
Okay. So they are feeding the Mosasaur great white sharks.
Yes.
Yep.
That seems like a little bit of a waste of money.
Well, it also seems like a slight on Spielberg.
Well, that's
because
I mean, it kind of
okay. Well,
to that.
Yeah, but I'm like, okay, how much did it cost to go capture that great white? Go
Aren't
bring it all the way. Like,
endangered too?
Like
illegal?
Like,
pretty
like,
sure.
Can
yeah.
we not just feed it like a giant slab of beef? Like this
cow.
Slab of beef is roughly the estimate of the size of an elephant.
Let me ask you something,
like,
man.
Here we go.
You're sitting in SeaWorld. You're going to see a Mosasaur eat something. What's more interesting to you? A slab of beef
or a full-on
great white shark?
I get it. I'm just saying, if they're worried about profit margins, maybe they should take that down.
So a couple of the callbacks. They say that the doors on the monorail are reclaimed from the original Jurassic Park. You can see the walkie-talkies that Hammond and Sattler use in the background.
Oh my gosh. You can see all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like they have,
when they find the original.
Right. They got the night vision goggles. There's a point where the PA system.
I got goosebumps when they showed like the even like the raincoats, like the little yellow raincoats. I was like, oh, I know where they are.
I saw the original when they got the Jeep. I was like, oh, I love those Jeeps. I remember that movie made me want Jeeps as a kid.
And we had one sitting outside of our theater.
Oh my God, there was a person in my neighborhood who used to have one. And now it's cool. I'm so
who's
upset.
Who's this wonderful dork that Jurassic Park? That's
more cool to me than the guy who has like the Ferrari and dresses like Batman.
Yeah.
I would rather go for a ride in the Jurassic Park Jeep. But there's a point where the PA system is talking and it's like, don't forget to come to this restaurant and try our famous Chilean sea bass.
Oh,
which is,
nice.
From the first movie.
That reminds me. So... Sorry, Brian, but there is a Margaritaville in Jurassic World, and during the Pterodon Pterodactyl Hitchcock birds like attack, if you look very closely, there is a man at Margaritaville, like an extra.
Oh, yes!
Grabs his margaritas and runs away! I would love that.
He's like running for cover, but he's like, I can't forget my margaritas. And he's
running very carefully as well. You can tell. Like, he's like, can't spill a drop. Can't spill a drop.
There's very absurd humor in this movie. Like, a lot.
I was going to say, the book that Ian Malcolm wrote in the second film is there.
Yes.
I was looking for that. I had heard that that's in the film.
There's the flare to help signal the feeding. They go by the original waterfall from the original helipad. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in there for people.
Well, there's also the cartoon.
Mr. DNA.
DNA.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. DNA.
Dino DNA.
One thing that I had an argument with a friend. So there's very obviously a Bryce Dallas Howard's character who is named Claire. Okay. her character has a Starbucks cup in her hand, but. I was looking at it, and I thought I saw a dinosaur skeleton instead of like the typical Starbucks logo. I don't know if y'all caught that or not.
Really? Ooh.
Like I can imagine this being a product kind of, you know, souvenir kind of, hey, come shop at the Starbucks on Jurassic World and get this limited edition
Starbucks cup.
Starbucks cup, and it's got like, you know. It's got the Jurassic World logo on it.
I would get that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love that. That'd be awesome. The amount of like shit that this movie gives product placement to. Like Verizon Wireless presents the Indominus Rex.
I love that.
But it's done very cleverly.
Yeah.
Well, the Mercedes things is a little. It's kind of overboard.
Yeah.
I don't mind it
because definitely Mercedes has like a very wide product line, and you know they make some of these vehicles like in reality, so that works.
Plus, I don't even think about it because I'm still too busy thinking about the original Jeep.
It sounds really funny too, the way it kind of runs. I don't know. It sounded funny.
Speaking of.
No,
Mercedes?
The Jeep.
The Jeep. Yeah. Well, it was fixed by kids. Surprisingly.
Yeah, and running off of like a go-kart battery.
Yeah.
I actually think Jeeps are designed to be fixed very easily. Because
they are. I have a friend who has a Jeep and he's... Yeah.
They were made for the military.
Yeah.
So, but I will say, so one of my favorite, actually, I wouldn't say it's product placement, but it's definitely plays into the whole like cheesy theme park vibe that this movie's trying to give off. Is when they're in the gyrosphere and the informational video is Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
And these kids could not be less interested in this Jimmy Fallon informational video. And I understand that because I really do not like Jimmy Fallon.
Aww.
So I thought that was fantastic.
That helps you really get in the character's head. You're like, oh, I understand them now.
Oh, I thought that was great.
Okay, well, we've just been geeking out over this movie. Is there any final things that we want to talk about?
I don't know. I was really kind of surprised because I know that this movie has gotten very divisive reviews, and yeah. I really thought that I wasn't going to enjoy it. And I mean, there's some really bad acting in this. I mean, there is. But I think it's a lot of fun. It's a fun-ass movie.
It's great. I liked this movie. I thought it was fun. I thought it was a grand old time. I mean, I was reading reviews, and I was like, how do you muster the energy to hate this much? Like, some people were, like, really...
Yeah.
Like, really messed up over this movie.
It did not deserve some of the vitriol it got. I don't know. It was just kind of... And I understand some of the complaints, but it's also, like, to get mad over someone like, oh, the sexism in this movie, which I really think is a comment on...
That is... literally something that has happened with every major film that's been released this year.
Yeah,
it's starting to come into a theme.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just... I agree that sexism in Hollywood is a problem.
Yes.
I agree that there are regressive gender roles across all of pop culture. But
this,
like,
is not a very good example
of
that. Yeah,
this is a weak example.
Exactly.
I would say that the Black Widow thing from Avengers, which I thought was overblown... is a better example than this.
Yeah. Well, and it's also kind of like I said before, I feel like there are some of the things that people champion or some of the things that critics and audiences think are amazing movies, I think are very sexist or very racist. And like those disturb me more. Like for it to be so obvious, it doesn't offend me because it's like, well, it's so obvious. Like you can't even get offended about it because it's so like, ugh, it's like almost like childish. But it doesn't bother me, but it would bother me if this was like a very serious drama and people were like, oh, it's so important. And it's saying so much about like relationships or about like, and then, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, yeah. Why are you getting mad about this? It's just so silly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree.
That's my take on it.
And that final scene with the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Every time I go to say Tyrannosaurus Rex, I almost say the Jurassic Park.
Because
apparently I am so deeply tied in. Every time I think, I don't know what it is. I like, it's like Jurassic Park is a T-Rex in my head.
It's like Avengers for you.
Well, I also said when the gate went up and it revealed and the T-Rex emerged from the shadows, I actually whispered out loud, "Hey, buddy."
Well, it's funny because as they were being attacked by the Indominus Rex, I was like, man, we didn't really get a lot of T-Rex in this. Like, there's just that one scene where they're obviously not showing it because that kid doesn't give a shit. And
so
then
fantastic.
They brought it out. And I was like, yes, this movie has done it. I'm cool with this.
I thought it was very funny because I thought we were about to get the Mosasaur on land. Because she asked him to open Paddock 19 and he's like, what's in Paddock 19? And I was like, the Mosasaur? What is about to happen in this film?
No, like, when she said like, that, I was like, oh, I know what she's doing.
I was so excited.
I was amped about it. This movie has a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. I guess it's just the people I was reading who seemed to hate it. I don't understand.
Have y'all realized how much money this film has already made?
Oh, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
I mean, like, it is almost not worth us having a spoiler section, because according to Box Office Mojo...
fucking matter.
Yeah, everyone has seen it. And like anyone who hasn't seen it probably will be seeing it. And it made $204 million.
Yeah.
204.6. That's an estimate. So it could be lower, but it could also be higher.
I mean, we're talking and it's Sunday and, you know.
Yeah.
It is the second highest all-time opening between the Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh, jeez.
I'll be honest with you, I did not see that coming at all.
I didn't think it was going to hit that hard.
No.
I think this film definitely reveals something that I've been feeling for the past like decade or so, and that we have a severe lack of films with dinosaurs. Like this is basically the only franchise
I was
going to
say
have
that as
dinosaurs.
A joke. I'm so happy that that's what you were actually going for.
I mean, it's like, seriously, guys, like this is the only one that's kind of filling that niche.
Right.
And apparently the niche, or the niche, whatever you want to call it.
The itch for the niche is big.
The niche
is very, very big.
The itch, like, for the niche.
Well, Bill, so if we're talking about the need for dinosaur movies, so, and I'm talking about the possible RoboCop dino movie.
That won't work.
I know, but like, I don't know what else to call it, because when I envision this movie, I envision it like how in RoboCop it was like, crime is out of control, and like, we have to stop it somehow. We need like a super cop, and we're going to inject this man with dino DNA. Like, that's kind of how I envision it, and that's why I keep calling it RoboCop.
I only want movies where the dinosaurs are like out in nature, and I think that, you know, in making this crazy hybrid and then fucking destroying it like they do, I think that, you know, if it's the same creative team, they've obviously put a stamp down. They're like, look, that's not what we're going to do. That's not what we're here for.
Well, okay, I was going to say, there is another dinosaur movie from the 80s starring Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, God, no. You monster. Why would you bring that up?
Wait, what?
There's a movie from the 80s starring Whoopi Goldberg. She's a cop and she gets teamed up with a dinosaur.
Oh, no.
It was also a cop. So I'm like, so this guy has already happened.
Right. Okay, so one interesting tie-in to the Planet of the Apes series is that Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver actually have screenplay and story by credit for this film.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
why
that
the humans
until...
suck.
Exactly.
I've noticed this, that like, there are complaints that you could easily apply to two different movies that some people will just ignore for a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I have hated each of the Planet of the Apes movies, because honestly,
what?
I'm not,
oh,
I don't,
man, really?
I don't ever root for the apes. I love this reboot
or whatever.
No,
you want to call
I like
it.
The first movie, the people were way too stupid, and I didn't.
That's the
trust...
point.
That's not, dude, like, the only way they
even
could make
John
the apes seem smarter was to make the humans like Simpsons level dumb, and it just didn't work for me, because I wasn't awed by the apes because the humans set such a low bar. And then I didn't want the apes to win. I didn't want them to escape. I didn't believe that Caesar would leave. Like, there's a whole bunch of problems. And then the second film, it was just like a bunch of one-dimensional human characters that we spent too much time with. We didn't spend enough time with the apes. And again, I didn't want the apes to win. You're never going to make me want the extinction of humanity to happen. And I don't care how much you show me baby apes wrestling with their dads. Now, in this film, it works because I did really empathize with the dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
And they found a way to make the one-dimensional characters that are human work by grounding them, like we said, in old stock characters, mm-hmm. and still making them, like, good.
Well, and it's very much that thing where it's like, oh, you're an uptight lady, and the only thing that's going to take care of that is if you get a dick in your life. Like, which is...
Get something up in that D-box, am I right?
Get up in that D-box. But that's basically what it is, but it's such a, like, ridiculous, like, all right, I know what this is. Which is, like, that's what romantic comedies are.
Not only that, but, like, I can tell you that about Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. I can't really tell you anything about Jason Clarke or even Gary Oldman in The Rise of the Planet, Rise of the Dawn of the Mid-Afternoon Snack of the Planet of the Apes.
Jeez. Well, and it's also like, they're also, I will say that there's no chemistry whatsoever between Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt.
Not really.
I don't know. Not a lot, but there was a little bit. I mean, there's not, they don't really have any romance scenes.
No.
And when she kisses him, I get, for 2 seconds, I looked down to look at the check, and then I looked back up, and they were kissing, and I was like, wait, what? When did that happen?
That's right after she shoots the pterodactyl, right?
Yeah.
But, like, that should be, like a happy moment, not like,
there was some shit
let's kiss.
I was like, people are getting attacked and murdered by gigantic prehistoric bird dinosaurs.
That's why I was fine with the fact that their kiss did not last long.
Yeah, it was kind of... I don't know. It was weird.
I love Jake Johnson going in for the same thing and getting shut down.
That was fantastic.
I have a boyfriend. Oh, it's, you know, you just never talk about it. It's like, no, well, you know, it's work and blah, blah, blah. I was like, wow.
No, no. She didn't say, oh, no, no, it's work. She goes, it's work. I don't... Like, yeah, like implying that work. She doesn't talk about her personal... Yeah. And I'm like, but if I've worked across from you for like 5 years, like hopefully I would recognize that.
There's even that very brief scene where it cuts to them and he's sitting there telling him her, it's like a snippet of their conversation. And he's like, yeah, you know, I think of Artie as like my real dad, not my stepdad. And it's just really strange. There's a lot of like strange, almost like sick. I don't even know what to call it.
It's like
not indie humor. Yeah. Or something like that.
I would love to have a tie-in, like, you know how Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. exists?
Yeah.
Just like Office Drones of Jurassic World.
I would love that. It would almost be like, I feel like it would almost be like Cabin in the Woods a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh, man. But yeah, right. I did.
Sequel.
I really.
We got to write these up, man. We got Jurassic Park.
I don't know what I want.
We got Euro Jurassic Park. We got Office Drones of Jurassic World prequel. I mean,
what if they built a new Jurassic Park in Australia and it was Jurassic Park Down Under?
I like that.
Rides in.
Oh, that could play in. It's like Mad Max is
going to be eaten by a dinosaur.
Right. It's like, why are there dinosaurs in the new Mad Max film? It's like, oh, you didn't see the last Jurassic Park film, did you?
Oh my god.
All right. Well, I think we're done.
Yeah, we should probably stop.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about what's coming out on Blu-ray because we've been here for a while. Again, Bill, what is it about you? Maybe it's just the fact that you show up for like the most geek out awesome movies.
Oh, and I don't stop y'all.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair,
you don't pump the brakes with your stunning lack of charisma.
Well, also, we talked about three movies the last time Bill was on, which was a tall order.
Right. This time we only talked about one, and we're still at an hour 40 recording time right now.
Oh, jeez. Just fantastic.
We're so fucked. Anyway.
I'm sure Jordan will not be upset that we went an hour and 47 minutes.
More bang for the buck.
Yeah, man.
This podcast is the Indominus Rex of the film stage show. Bigger.
We got
meaner.
Cuttlefish.
We got African tree frogs.
Oh, yeah. Man. And we got a little Velociraptor DNA just sprinkled in there.
Yeah, just enough to be able to talk with them and be like,
just fantastic.
Hey, bros.
I know. Like you said, I really hope someone adds, like, some wonderful YouTube genius goes in and adds subtitles.
I would love it. Okay, this is what I would love to do. Only use the dialogue that was spoken by the dog in Beginners as well. So, like, Chris Pratt standing next to...
Now you're giving directives? Okay.
Chris Pratt standing next to Bryce Dallas Howard, and then it cuts to blue, and it says, tell her the darkness is about to consume us unless something drastic happens right now. Or like when he's yelling at them and it can be like, well, I can understand 120 words. I speak none. It would be great. And then like
that
just every
fantastic.
Once in a while, are we married yet? Guys, get out there and watch Beginners. It's a fantastic movie. It's on Netflix.
You sold me, man.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. Let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. Bill? You're no longer in the Baltimore State Hospital for the Criminally Insane, correct?
Yes,
you got,
that is
you
correct.
Got cleared of those cannibalism charges.
Yeah, I'm out. Where can you find me? You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find my writings on thefilmstage.com and various other places that I won't mention now.
Okay. Amanda Waltz.
I'm on Twitter at Media Waltz. You can also check out my blog about Pittsburgh film at Steel Cinema on WordPress. And I'm also on Letterboxd, also Media Waltz.
All right.
So that's it.
And I'm on Letterboxd and Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can also read my stuff on the film stage and my personal site, dearfilm.net. And I also do the podcast Movie Dare, with my friends Dan Gvozden and Ben Pavic, so check it out. Mm-hmm. That is all for today. Join us next week when we'll be talking about Inside Out, the newest film from Pixar.
Ooh.
Yeah. You want to come and spend 3 hours talking about that?
That sounds good.
Sweet. You want to talk over each other about Inside Out?
I get to be anger if we're all going to choose an emotion to be.
Oh, is that Lewis Black?
Be joy. I think she's rejecting
disgust.
That right now.
She's Amy Poehler. I guess I can take that. Okay.
All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you for joining us. Tune in next week.